ribs and cheese. I don't drink a beer with you. So he said to me, he called me aside, he said, you have any objections to sleeping with Otis? Otis was mine. And what the hell are you talking about? I said, I broke Otis into the business, and we shared many a bed together. I said, of course not. I said, Otis isn't on it this long. And he stays in one place all night, you know. So we're in there, and John has all these packages of crackers. And chunk, chunk, chunk. He sounded like one of Bobby Reynolds' rats.
I didn't all day.
And glug, glug, glug on the beer. And he's sitting on the bed. He gets down, and I swear this is the truth. The last package is of crackers. He eats the last cracker. And the slats on the bed broke, and he fell on the floor. I said, that's the cracker that broke the camel's back. I've heard about it, now I've seen it. Well, his face was so red, and he said, don't you ever tell anyone about that.
No, come on.
And I laughed so hard that I wet my pants.
Serve you right, serve you right. That's like so funny now when you've just worked a hard week and you're hungry and you break your damn bed down. It's not all that humorous. That's what they call a jackpot because you're talking about all the crap that happened to you that you're making
miserable. Have you seen that Hungry Jack commercial on television where the woman says, hungry, hungry Jack? And the big fella comes out and all you see is his leg and you think it's an illusion. It's a commercial.
What? It's me?
They're closing the doors. I think they're trying to tell us something.
They're trying to say you're too loud, is what it is.
You're bothering the neighbor.
You want to break your lease?
No, that's the night if you want to get out of here.
That was nice when you came down. I really enjoyed having you. I'd like you to come down again just as, not from this restaurant, but just as a friend.
Okay.
Anytime. You and Amanda, okay?
Okay.
Call first to make sure that not all of my kids are there. Come over. We'll sit around Jackpot, drink a little beer, swim, you know, have a good time.
But halfway through, he's going to pull Bonnie aside and say, Dick's driving me crazy.
That son of a bitch.
That's just the man. He's just that way.
He said to me, do you want me to do such and such? I said, well, if you'd like to, Harry, sure, go ahead. All this stuff has to be done around here. And then he calls my wife aside and tells her I'm driving him crazy. Of course, as far as this guy is concerned, it'd be a short drive just around the corner.
He worked for me
while six shingles have blown off the roof there. Leola. She was in the business long before you came in.
Leola?
Yeah. No.
Leola Tracy. Her right name was Homer Tracy. Father was a judge up in Ohio. She said that he had grown up in a mental institution.
For hair?
Yeah. Probably. And maybe it's true. Of course, I asked him several times. He vehemently denied it.
I think dinner's ready.
Fine.
I swallowed some more little food.
I can bet you a bath in a bucket is still a bath in a bucket.
In my respect, it hasn't changed very much. It's harder to get a whole lot. It used to be much easier to get a decent lot because you get water from the engine.
He's down the
shore. Alexandria is an example. When we first came there 20 years ago, there were good show boxes all around the place.
When you first came there 20 years ago?
Yeah, in Alexandria.
Oh, when you moved?
Yeah,
after
when I moved.
Business.
Yeah. Now you've got to, it's very hard to find a good show out around Alexandria. You've got an awful lot of them set up in shopping centers and parking lots. And imagine driving those old Monterey Actors down to that tarmac.
Uh-huh, I've done it. Dozens of times.
No, and getting them out. It's easy enough to drive them, but pulling them out.
And having to fill in
I set up on a parking lot, a tropical park in Miami. Racetrack,
and it was blacktop reinforced with concrete. And remember that spot in Pennsylvania? What was that? Bedford.
A Bedford.
They had the fairgrounds filled in with shale. And it took us a whole day, I mean from 8 in the morning till 8 at night, just to drive the stakes. That's not putting up sidewalk, or banners or tent or anything, or stages or anything. Just to get the top and the front up.
Well, I'll tell you what it was like in the old days. We played Toledo with the Jones Show. And it started to rain.
Excuse me, does anybody want to?
As we got in there, by the time they got the wagons off the train and into the lot, it was so soft, the wagons sank into the mud right up to the beds of the. So we literally paved that whole midway with bales of straw. You'd carry a bale in there. The minute you got off into the soft stuff, you'd sink in above your knees. Drop your bale. And we got 2 days when it didn't rain, and on teardown night it started to rain again. Normally, we'd have that show torn down, and the wagons loaded by 3 o'clock in the morning, if it were a short haul to the train. We were still there late afternoon, the following day.
You were on rail shows as well as the truck shows.
Well, yeah, the Jones Show.
Right.
Was the one
you, Fred, were never on a rail show, were you?
Not very much.
The
only one I was ever on in a railroad show would be Reuben and Jerry, and that was very early, about 1928.
I want to return to the railroad, but why couldn't you have been on a railroad show with a geek?
They wouldn't allow it to light, not a climbing.
Well, you couldn't do anything with a geek. You had to be on a small show.
That's right.
Well,
because of the fairs they played. They would lose these fair dates if they went into that.
It was so strong.
Oh, yes. Right. This was a powerful joint.
And you couldn't go up against those big operations. You couldn't go up against a motor drone. You couldn't go up against a big girl show, you know.
Well, we did it on independent dates all the time, though.
But yeah, but it was... Yeah, but they were special. You couldn't play still against that.
Oh, returning to what I was going to ask about, what was the difference back then between living on a and working on a rail show versus some truck shows? Because truck shows, you know, just really getting started in the late 20s, early 30s, and the roads were...
No, there were a lot of gilding shows.
I imagine there are a few that are moved by...
Oh, God, you couldn't do it. Handle everything twice. Have you ever seen a gilly? Even seen a gilly?
Yeah.
Do you know what it is,
guys? She knows what the word gilly means, I'm sure. Well, it's bringing it off the train, putting it on the wagon.
Not a train. Unloading it out of an American Express box.
But it was a train. That's
Which then you take it out and put it on the wagon and take it to the lot and then unload it again.
Gilly it, that's a different
handle thing. Handle everything twice.
Yes.
Some of my help thought my stages were all supposed to be gillied on teardown night.
That's crazy.
They take them apart and stack them up real neat. I said, just lay them where they fall, then you want to pick them up again. Or take them to the truck, it's even better. Didn't understand that. I thought it was supposed to look pretty on the way down.
And think they should handle them with caution. They never did, like that banner.
Speaking of truck shows, who was this big Chevy dealer in Illinois that used to concentrate on selling trucks to showmen, and you didn't have to pay him anything out of season?
I can't remember of any.
Charlie Gross?
Could be.
He had just about every truck show in the Midwest. Had trucks from Charlie Gross. And the gimmick was you didn't have to pay him except during the season. Well, nobody knew how to figure out on Midways, knew how to figure out compound interest and time payments and stuff like that. So they thought they were getting a big
That must have been Johnny Cannoli used to do that.
I don't know, but Charlie Ghost was the big man in the Midwest in those days, and every billboard carried one of his ads.
Well, in recent years, it's been Johnny Cannoli.
I'm sorry when he died, I had to buy ballpoint pens after that. Yeah. He's come on the line and give everybody pens. He had an office in Altoona in Miami.
Didn't he die recently?
Yeah, just about a year ago.
I remember his pens. It's interesting because outside I mean, people that aren't in the business, there are certain key people that you do business with. Poster printers, people that
try and on Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
But I mean, they know the ins and outs of lots of shows. They've backed a lot of shows when they've been in trouble. But likewise with truck dealers.
And Ned Torchy of Wisconsin Deluxe must have sold all the plaster that ever appeared
exactly.
on a ball
game. Right. Yep. That was Milwaukee.
Pittsburgh
has the plate. To make and also has some of the original Harry Lewis and store show posters with you banging on it. Works great somewhere at my. There's some $2 a piece. They got the plate to make and you can have them all be made one. You might want to contact them.
When I go over that, I think
if you do, send me a poster. I know they get where you can.
$2, huh?
But you can probably buy the whole plate for them. That's in their stock when they send you around a catalog to see if you have a print show poster you can buy. And that's what it is. It's Harry Lewis.
That's another book that you would enjoy. It only came out in paperback titled Freak Show Me. Harry Lewis from the first, really from the 20s to the 50s.
Yeah.
And it only came out in paperback, but I know a dealer in Pittsburgh who has the book.
It's a good book.
Yeah. It's on Carnegie.
Good Lord, Amanda, are you just now getting something?
I'm just next to someone.
I thought you lived in a kitchen.
Isn't there any
There's
way
more bed there too.
Couldn't you move in here and use some of this table or something?
No, this
I'm
is
done,
fine.
I'm done with this area. So
no, this is fine. In fact, I'll get one of these.
One thing that I've been curious about, and we've got a nice setup here with John in the business a decade and you guys in the 30s. I'm curious as to whether there are any talkers that you particularly remember as hearing either hearing yourself or hearing about you regarding this. You know, outstanding, or any that you've heard of, John, that you may never have heard, but you've heard great things about.
Yeah, I used to. Tony Paradise, everybody used to talk about.
Yep.
You ever heard of him? Tony Paradise?
That's a new one on me.
Everybody used to always tell me about him. He used to change his clothes between every bally. Probably a tuxedo between every bally, yeah.
Who's this?
Tony Paradise.
My idol was Frank Davis with Reuben and Cherry, and I was a kid about 16. I absolutely used to stand spellbound. This man would come down on the second step of the ballet platform, and he would beg, plead, coax, and threaten. It was beautiful.
He's doing a ballet there.
Oh, it was so gorgeous to see him. It was poetry, really.
That Reuben show had some powerful
That's right. And you know what happened to him? I found out, and it's a wonder I didn't get out of the business right then, because I found out that my idol and ideal, when it came nighttime, he rolled up in a sidewall over there in one of the sideshow tops, see? And I thought anybody that could talk like that should have the greatest accommodations in the world.
I guess sweet, at least.
At least, yes. But it didn't work that way. And you know, the sad ending that came to Frank Davis? He wound up in a mental hospital, and you know, all he did was walk up and down, pointing with a cane to that long line of pictorial paintings, and away down yonder, and away down yonder, he said. That's her picture.
I met a character like that on the Jack George show, and I wish I could remember his name. Every day, and he was a distinguished looking man. Every day he'd be out there sweeping the midway with a broom. And always pleasant, obviously had been around for a long time, just full of the lore, you know, of the midway. And I got curious about him, and I started asking a few questions, and somebody said, oh, didn't you know? He said, he tried to take a railroad show into Mexico. By the time the Mexicans got through with him, he didn't have shoes enough on his feet to walk out.
He wound up sweeping the midway.
And it cracked him up.
Oh, my goodness.
Because he'd been a very successful showman. And he thought, well, if he can make it in the States, Mexico must be hungry.
Were there any kind of shows that were better to do an opening pitch for than others? I mean, what was the aim of a show?
Well, there was status, if you're talking about that.
Yeah, I guess that's
right. Or you mean turning tips?
Either one.
The biggest tips you'd always get with a good girl. Not always, but...
And there was an interesting thing. In our day, they didn't really rip and tear with the blow-off of a girl show, strangely enough.
They didn't?
The minute a guy started flashing with a girl show, then he was no longer a showman. Hmm. and only as a last resort. There would be four or five blow-offs sometimes, and the customer still didn't see anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the minute you flashed anything or anything of that type,
they'd seen it all.
That was it, and you were out of business. It wasn't so much
a
moral thing as it was that this was the last and final one that you could present.
Yeah.
What do you roll them around for the next time? I mean, that's it. See.
So all week long you promised them the big Saturday
exactly,
night
yes.
Ball.
Yeah.
And in fact, you registered complete amazement when the man came down and said, look, I didn't see what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a minute. Aren't you a state man or something? If you aren't, well, I'm ready to go along with it if you are. And here goes another blow-off. And it would run five and six. How in the world that you didn't get absolutely murdered on these things, I don't know. But I know one final guy used to do this. He would come down.
Excuse me, Alan. I'm going to reach a course. You can get this cigar.
And he needed moving money awfully bad, and there wasn't quite enough yet. This is right in the depths of the Great Depression. And he came along with it, and I think he turned five blow-offs, and he was counting it out there, see, and he still didn't have enough to move, and he was desperate. He had to get one more, and he made the most powerful opening for a blow that I've ever heard. He says, Harry, there's a sledgehammer back there. Would you bring it down? They brought it down. Now there's another one right out by those stakes, right out in back. They brought three or four sledgehammers. Gentlemen, he says, if you don't see all of it, rich, red, rare, and racy, just like you like it, Harry, I want you to hand the man the sledgehammer. I want you to hand him another one. You go to work on me. He says, that's it. That's all I'm going to say.
You're
and
kidding.
That's as powerful as it gets. And he gave him the final one, and, of course, he did move the show. But if that one would have lost out, that show would be there today.
Since the Commodore has joined us, I was sort of asking them, who are some of the best pitchmen that they've ever heard or ever heard about?
Talkers.
Yeah, talkers. Right? I keep saying pitchmen because we've been using that so much this week. But you sort of bridge the gap between the doctor here and John. And who are some of the best pitchmen that you ever either heard yourself or heard about, besides yourself?
Doc Hankins. Unequivocally, Doc Hankins is one of the best.
He was good.
Well, he still is.
I heard him as a mark. Where and when did he work?
You name it. He worked for the 101 Ranch as a musician.
Going back.
A very sad story about Ross Hankins or Doc. But I still admire him.
Is he out of Texas?
No, Minnesota originally.
Okay, because I'm trying to think of the name of some...
Red Wing, Minnesota was his hometown.
I've been trying to think of the name of some...
He played in every major musical in New York City. Paul LaBelle City Service Orchestra, whom I'm sure that Fred will remember that orchestra. He was a flute and piccolo player. And he lost his lower teeth. And you know you have to have the pressure there to play flute or piccolo. So as he told me, with tears in his eyes, he went to a hawk shop with his flute and his piccolo, knowing full well that he'd never pick them up again. And went out and joined the club.
He wasn't with any particular show for any
Well, he's been all of them at one time or another. He is the epitome of an inside man. Our front talker.
He's the original guy with Birth of a Baby, really. That's what everybody remembers.
The birth
when you say Birth of a Baby, you remember Doc Hankins.
But I remember, I asked him one time in Winter Haven, Florida.
I've got three copies at home.
I said, did you used to leather lung, Doc? Yes, he said, there's a leather lung. And I said, what happened? Did you blow your pipes? There's nothing wrong with my pipes. Well, I let it cool. So, for that play, you know, Steve, I'm writing, for the opening, I have it as though you're walking on a carnival midway. You know, the Jenny's always up front, and the Joanie's trying to call the march in, then the motor drone, and then you work your way back, and then the girl show, and then the sideshow across the back end, just like it used to be in the old days. So I asked Doc if he'd make a girl show opening for me. He said yes. So I taped him. He said, could I hear it? I said, yeah. And this gravelly voice came on. He said, my God, do I sound like that? I said, Doc, I tried to tell you that 20 years ago. He said, I never realized that I sounded like that. He's 84 years old. And he's as cognizant of what's going on as any one of us here.
Who had the, was Beckman and Garrity style in the early 40s?
No, early 30s.
30s.
Yeah. Beckman was in the 70s.
Because I'm trying to think of the name of somebody who I've heard about his opening pitches, Valley, that was on. So I've got one of their yearbooks from about 1940, 41, maybe 38. And it was just, it wasn't, I was thinking it was Beckman and Garrity. The color was orange and.
Yeah, it's curious about them.
Doc Wilson came over from Beckman and Garrity way back in 1928, 1929.
Beckman, the Beckman show had been around for a long
time.
That's
right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was just trying to come up because with his name.
He had an unborn show over there.
Beckman was a man in his 70s, I think, in 1937.
Yeah. Do you know that blind opening that John makes about the woman coming on the lot with the baby?
Yes, yes.
And Carl Lothar bursting mm-hmm. into tears. Would any of you believe me if I told you that it's true? Sure as I'm sitting on this Davenport, every word of that is true.
Dick kind of figured that out, and I kind of worked on it a little bit, but that was mostly Dick's idea. That
no, it's
Priscilla,
true.
We had Priscilla the Monkey Girl and blow off him.
Well, Priscilla the Monkey Girl, I saw her.
She was given as
she
a
was
baby
with the
to
Cole
Carl
show
Roth.
As recently as within the last 10 years.
Where?
Yeah, the Cole show came through.
Beatty? Beatty Cole?
That's
what it'd be now.
Clyde I think they dropped, I think they, yeah, maybe, I thought they dropped, well, it doesn't matter. But anyway, here was Priscilla.
Was Emmett with her?
Yeah, I didn't
yeah,
see him.
Yeah, yes.
He may have been.
Right, because they weren't separated 10 years ago.
Huh?
They were not separated 10 years ago. No, they've been together now.
Well, she was on Carl, with Carl Lothar when I was on the Jones Show.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Her parents gave her to Carl Lothar.
Oh, really?
Out and out gave her to her.
Well,
it was like slavery.
Emmett had the same problem
with
Johnny Bagiano.
Papa Joe Bagiano.
From what I heard, Priscilla
Emmett's
got treated better.
Emmett's right name is Driggers, and he was given away as a baby to Papa Joe Bagiano.
Yeah.
That's right.
From what I understand, it, Priscilla had it a little better than Emmett did as she was growing
well,
up.
Well, she had an education.
She was treated more as part of the family than he was.
Right.
I worked with him for about 3 years.
Well, you talk about the greatest showman, the greatest inside lecturer, and again, as I wrote in that article, this man is sitting right here tonight.
No, come on.
Now, wait a minute.
Enough of this.
I'll tell you, when you bring in a tip, and you had to put the steam on.
I heard that opening. Somebody's going to have to take some heat off that.
I expect to get slowed every time I work.
No, it wasn't difficult, really. There wasn't that much heat. You may have thought there was that much heat. You probably should have thought
speakers,
that.
Not only have they been turned in here on this pathetic story, but they then hear this backup of these speakers all the time, right in the pit, and he's working around the pit all the
uh-huh.
time.
Uh-huh, and they keep hearing, and they keep being reminded what you told them.
You're right. And
that's
we've
rough.
Only got maybe four gumps left here. We don't want to blow them because maybe it's too late. We don't want to do that. Still got to blow off the grandstand coming. So I want to hold this as long as I can. And I holler back at Robert and I say, how is it? Any heat in there? Everything fine,
is
doctor.
Is the tape on? Can I
fly? Yeah.
You can lie too. Come on.
Okay.
And sure enough, we would be able to hold steam and go ahead and make those four jumps work for the whole blow off and everything. The grandstand. So I felt very safe at all times. I think that's a much tougher job than it is for me out there making these rather flamboyant statements.
You know, when I used to do a pickle punk opening on the blow off, you know?
Yes.
I wouldn't let anybody go back there and lecture but me. Because everybody else I ever had got heat. And if I made the opening, I could go back there and square it. And if they had any questions about what happened, why did you say that, I could tell them why.
Uh-huh.
I worked for Dick Johnson the first year I was in the business. He had two pickle punks. He had an eight baby and a frog baby in there. And every time I made the opening, whoever was back there, they'd come out looking for me. You know, he'd say, well, I didn't tell you all that, the guy there, you know. But I'd go back and do it. Everybody said, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to make an opening, especially a blind opening, and then go back there and sell it. Let somebody else take the heat off you.
Right.
It never worked that way for me. And I worked a two-headed punk in the blow-off this past year, 79, when you weren't, everybody said you couldn't work them. And I worked it. Worked in Middletown, New York, where the kid you not to grab joint sell Perrier water. I'm not kidding.
I had professors come out of that show, though, after he got
aquarium and come out to me.
I'll tell you,
I have made a study of the troglodytes, or the cliff dwellers, and he said, this man here is the most knowledgeable person I've ever seen. There is a lousy pig sitting down in that pit. I mean, it's just a pitiful thing, and sell a professor.
Yeah, you're not referring to Fergus Falls where they had the nut house, was it?
I don't understand that. What is that?
The staff came down, remember?
No, I don't know that. How did that go?
Well, Fergus Falls, you know, had the state insane hospital.
Oh, yes.
And one night, the whole medical staff came down. To catch the show. They were impressed. One of them came out and he said, I've never seen anything like this in my life. He said, you certainly are to be congratulated.
Yeah, isn't that incredible? And you see, and then people say, well, you must have had to play some pretty backstage stuff.
Yeah.
And here we relish the fact of going into Rochester or any of these up in Minnesota, the highest class people in the world. They're better to work to than those chumps, that's right.
Well, you're the Smithsonian.
But speaking of great talkers, did anyone ever encounter Foch Middleton?
Really, you could put a geek show out here and probably people would love it.
No, what about Marsh Wonder?
I never knew him, but Foch Middleton used to wear one of these Turkish tarbooshes on his head, you know, all the time, and he had a little goatee, and he had feet about this long. You almost thought that they were slapstick feet, you know. But he was a powerful talker, and rather than jam, he'd never go down to a dime or 15 cents, whatever. It was always ladies in free. Mm-hmm. Instead of everybody on children's tickets, it was ladies free. God bless the ladies. The hand that rules the cradle, rocks the cradle, rules the world.
That's strong.
I tell you who else was a good talker in his day. It was Whitey Sutton. Y'all know
why?
It was
good.
It was. Excellent. Whitey taught me a lot. Whitey taught me, Whitey.
Well, I worked for Whitey and Slim Kelly.
Uh-huh.
I go back to the Slim Kelly days.
I never knew Mr. Kelly.
So do I. On motor drums, Sailor Joe, what was his last name? He was a talker on the John Shaw motor drum at the time. He was powerful simply because the guy overwhelmed them. They came in there because they didn't know what else to do. But he got through with them. They weren't persuaded.
Shorty Langston there that was with you for a while was a good motor drum.
Little Billy?
Oh, Billy Langston.
He wasn't all that great on the sideshow.
He was good on the motor, Joe.
He was all right. We wasn't nothing spectacular.
You ran up a monkey boat, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't do pitches for it?
Yeah, sure.
Did you go where they race, where they race, ride, drive?
Well, no, it was a standard opening. You couldn't grind on a drum because there was so much noise they couldn't hear you.
So. Oh, what the
hell? Bobby, put your chair up.
Oh, well, you don't want to hear.
Did you ever get
Carl Alden had everything. The dog, he had the dog.
No.
The Garotis?
I wonder if that would work today.
Yeah, it's
no
best.
No.
On the monkey drone.
Monkey speedway or monkey motor drone?
No, a monkey drone.
What's the difference between
I know where there's a drone, man.
Oh, a drone.
A drone, they actually drove.
Because I'm thinking monkey speedway.
No, a monkey drone. Somebody down in Iowa took a Maytag motor and put it into a little car. And the steering gear was a counterweight. The tie rod was in front of the axle rather than behind the axle. So when the car was tilted, the counterweight came to the inside and the wheels turned to the left. Well, on the carburetor, you had a small tank, very small tank, in which enough gas to keep the car up on the wall for 2 or 3 minutes. And you put the monkey in there, started the thing, gave it a shove, and away it would go. And when the engine would start to cough, you immediately gave the monkey the signal to come down off that wall. Just when they ran out of gas, they were down at the bottom. But the biggest problem on a monkey drum was to make that damn monkey keep his hands on the wheel. If it was a he, it would do it, but the female monkey, they absolutely refused to keep their hands on the wheels. So what you did was rig up a wire and put it around the cowling and hook it to the magneto. And every time the monkey put his hands up there to grab, he'd get a jolt. There was no other place to grab except the wheel. It took about twice around, and they learned to keep the hands on the wheels.
You're talking about
talkers a minute ago. What about Bobby Hassan, who was on the Ringling Show in what, the early 50s?
Bobby was a good talker. I worked with Bobby.
Who, what about Whitey Savage? Is that sort of, did you ever know him?
Not really. I didn't get around him much. But Bobby Hassan, Dick Best, and all those guys I worked with.
Osh Wonder was a good talker, too. A hard worker.
Paul Sprague and Woody Olson were not sensational.
Can I tell you something, in all seriousness, many of these great talkers we're talking about, like Mush Wonder and all these guys, they're playing nothing but state fairs where you really don't have to be a talker.
That's true.
You know what, when you're a talker?
When things are tough.
When there are six people on the midway, you got in April.
That's right.
That separates the talker from the bullshit. Yeah.
That's right.
How do you, anybody
can be a talker when they're coming in on the natch. Show me when there's nobody out there, then get them in. Yeah.
Okay, you've all had the chance to listen to each other here in the last several days. Do you want to evaluate each other?
I'm the greatest talker in the world.
It's been interesting.
It's hard to follow that, but it's a fact.
I think it was very interesting what you pointed out of how when the Commodore used to work, people were accustomed to standing more. Today, people are somewhat impatient.
They had a longer attention span. Yeah.
Same way with France. If you got out there and did that today, you'd have to cut it.
Yes, you certainly would.
You would, because they wouldn't stand still that long. They're too impatient.
I'm
standing there absolutely bare naked. I don't have a rep in my hand or on my neck.
That's part of it, too.
A gump up here that I can work with.
Right.
If you were holding out screaming chicken, I'm sure that would
help. We've taken the teeth right out of the geek show.
And holding the swords while we're back.
Taking the teeth right out of the geek show. That's a hell of a phrase.
Yeah, it is. The long intestine teeth.
I think it showed today when we were able to have a couple of acts up on the ballet platform.
Sure. Oh, it helps. It helps build the tip.
I know that. I remember that when Paul Sprague was talking for Carl Lawther, and he had a dwarf, which he called Pygmy.
Yeah.
And I always remember the Pygmy because every night before we opened, you'd get a whole bunch of records. They'd start to turn up the sound system, you know, and check it out. And you'd get these records, and they'd play a few bars of music, and then another one would change. And it wasn't until the end of the season that I discovered the explanation for this. The Pygmy couldn't read. He couldn't read the labels on the records. But he had his favorite records, and he always played his favorites first. And so they'd get mixed up. And he'd play a few bars to listen to it and get them in the order that he wanted to play them during the night. But Paul could take that Pygmy and he could hold a tip for as long as he needed until he got a big enough tip to open. Just an incredible amount of time. And you're right, you couldn't do that.
Who was that pretty girl that used to work in the valley with the Gilly Gilly camp?
Run that by again.
She used to work on the valley with the Gilly Gilly can. You know what a Gilly Gilly can is? They toss back and forth, and they empty all the water out, and there's no water in it, and then she'd toss it back and forth, and then she'd empty some more water out of it. She used to dance on the front of the sideshow. I think it was Carl Lawther's daughter. She used to dance with the Gilly Gilly can and just keep pouring the water out of it.
You know, that's a
lot of bowl or something?
Huh?
Like a lot of bowl?
You know what a Gilly Gilly can is, don't you?
No, that's an Indian.
I know a Gilly Gilly man in India.
Yeah. That's what
you pour the
Indian
water out,
street
then
magicians
it appears
are
empty,
man.
Then you put it back again and you pour some more water.
Like a lot of bowl.
Right?
A lot of bowl, something like that?
Yeah.
Well, like a Brahma. Not a Brahma bowl, but it was like that. It was called the Gilly Gilly can.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been afraid to ask you this, Bobby, until we were away from the mall, but did you do a geek show pitch?
Certainly. As a matter of fact, I was a geek for a while.
Were you?
Certainly, I used to have a good one, too.
First
of all, you have to have somebody intelligent in that if you want to really do the show.
Contrary and popular.
Yeah, a good actor in the pit was much better than some jury.
Oh, yeah.
I used to do it. We used to take the thing. I used to put a strap. I used to have a tape and put a straight razor on my finger here. Go like this, and I take the thing and I go like this, and I take the bird and I go. I hit it across the neck and I squirt the blood up and I come down and I go. And it'd be rain blood all over.
You were a geek yourself?
Sure.
When was that?
I don't know.
I thought told the story about.
Remember, that was one of the great problems we had. Shorty kept wanting to toss those dumps out of the pit.
Yeah.
Well, in those days, in the summertime, women wore white linen suits.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, on any midway in August, the midway would be covered with women wearing white linen suits.
I forgot.
Trying to keep that damn Shorty from hitting one of those white linen suits with that dripping, bleeding gum.
And Shorty wasn't the smartest character in the world either. And I told him, I said, when I want that pit rousted, I'll holler back. Heat him up, hava, washa, malakia, like this. And Shorty couldn't understand that. And I'd holler two or three times. And I had to have some heat. I wanted to rouse, see. I'd finally run in and with the megaphone right over the edge of the pit. Heat up the pit a little bit. You know, and the marks really could understand quite well. You know, even anybody could figure that out in a hurry.
You should have said, he is heat up, the P is it.
Yeah, I suppose. He wouldn't have understood that, though. That's
enough. Oh, see, well, that's the thing.
Boy, and the pots and pans that fly out of there, you remember?
And, of course, you didn't have to ride with Shorty. He always rode with me in the truck. But
you were the doctor.
We were both doctors. But every town we went through, you'd pass the cemetery. Bob? Hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Well, what is it, Shorty? How many dead people in that cemetery? Well, Shorty, how many dead people in that cemetery? All of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Every single town we passed, day or night.
But you know, he wasn't that dumb, really.
That was his joke for the day.
Yeah. That was his joke for the season.
But you know, but he would also say, when he'd see a bunch of kids on the way to school, I had the privilege of riding with him a few times myself, you know, and you'd see these kids going along, nice little kids, all cleaned up and everything, and Shorty'd say, look at all those little kids going to school. Parents real proud of him, I bet you. And he says, you know what's going to happen to him, probably? No, Shorty, what? Probably all grow up to be geek show operators, he said. That was to throw the hooks into me, so he wasn't such a chump.
You know, Dick, you would ask me about Doc Hank as we're talking about him. One time he got kicked over running his birth of a baby blow. They wouldn't let it work, see. And so they needed the money. And he talked, he was with Jim Steinmetz. You know Jim? And they decided they would do Nicotine Nick, and they got clearance from the fair board. They said, as long as no sex or anything. So they got some skinny kid in there, and they made him up with a green eye shadow and sallow makeup. Of course, they didn't need much. According to Doc, he was nothing but skin and bones, and the bitter aloes between his fingers, and the cigarette butts all around, smoking one cigarette right at, you know that. Know the deal. He's addicted, actually addicted to nicotine. He cannot stop smoking cigarettes. He's wasting away. He's killing himself, blah, 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 blah. Well, people would go in, they would be just fascinated with this guy smoking one cigarette right after another. You know, coughing and all this. And he couldn't blow the tip off, couldn't get him back in the other show. So Doc would walk in. He always had to work with a nurse, and he had the stethoscope around his neck, you know. He said, you people will have to leave now. It's time for his shot. And they all started leaving. This one lady said, what do you give him, doctor? Without cracking a smile or anything. And Doc has arthritis. He has to turn his whole body. His neck is frozen. 10 cc's of aspirin, he said. Hesitating for a minute, 10 cc's of aspirin.
You know, I actually
shot a doctor extract of prophylactic.
I actually traded this geek, this original one we had, from Frank Hall with the Vanderburg Brothers Creative Combined Shows. You see, I had a geek show off that spring. But he was a pretty smart, intelligent fellow. I'm not going to make a geek, I could tell right away, but I had been with Frank the year before, and this Shorty had a very short span of attention. So Frank would say, will you go into that blue box and get the bridle for the pony? And in order for him to remember till he got there, he'd have to keep repeating this to himself, bridle in the blue box, bridle in the blue box. He'd say over and over to himself. So Frank used to get sick of that, and when I got ready to spring with this geek show, I said, Frank, I've got a very much better guy over here, and I'll trade you for Shorty. And he said, gladly, whatever he is, I'll take him, see. And that was the start of a beautiful friendship, because this Shorty used to enjoy his work. He took a certain pride in it. And he'd come back year after year and all that. But as That's you see, unusual. He had about three gags. Another one he'd give me, did you hear about the girl from Alaska? He would always give me that. There was a young girl from Alaska, and she would do what you ask her. She'd go to the woods, deliver the goods, and you'd be sore you ever asked her. Geez, that's good. Tomorrow I get the same story.
Exactly.
That's great.
Did any of you ever see
Cuckoo
the Bird Girl?
Oh,
Cuckoo
from Mars, yes.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Lala Kula the Bird Girl.
Cuckoo, Cuckoo the Bird Girl was a.
She was in the picture of the Freaks.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but
Betty
that
Green
was
her name.
That was way, way back, though.
Yeah, but
we have a girl like that in California who I was going to do that to. Jolene.
Suggest Rupp as a bird?
I was going to make Cooper.
How did,
well,
I've heard so much. That apparently in the 20s was one of the
yeah.
best working acts. Because she really wasn't a freak. She was, what, about 4 foot?
Just a kooky
yeah.
looking bird.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly what she was.
Can
with
you
skinny legs,
yeah.
and they put her in leotards to make them even look worse.
You see what I do on the coast that some of the people I do? Weird stuff. I got Jerry the Giant. He weighed 105 pounds.
You did a pitch
tall.
On him.
Of course, the problem now is that everybody's getting fed too well. You're not producing this material.
That's true.
Well,
I mean,
what can you
school
remember?
Lunches and milk to drink when you're a kid. You don't have rickets and flavor and all that. No, I'm serious.
That's
but
disgusting.
She used to produce some of those weird and all of these
you're
exotic.
Trying to put a legitimate show right out of business.
These exotic diseases.
No, wait a minute. Now wait a minute. There will always be freaks in the world.
Oh, you're gonna
because the medical science invents something. They invent something else to destroy it, such as thalidomide. I was watching Speak Up America last night, Agent Orange. I don't know how many thousands of veterans, and they are producing deformed children. These will eventually be freaks.
Yeah,
the thalidomide babies already know. And the marijuana is causing genetic difficulties, they say.
Well, Bobby,
so there's all, and always bear in mind, now Rosalie Woods, the armless girl, was a terrific attraction. And she was born as normal as anyone else. Playing around a minefield up in West Virginia as a little girl, picked up a hot wire and burned off both arms to the shoulder.
Well, where does
yet
that
she learned, after she got over the shock of losing both her arms, how to use her feet. She could light a stove, smoke a cigarette, write, typewrite, anything. And she was a terrific bag.
There's a girl down in Virginia Beach right now that that's armless and paints pictures for a living. She's out on the road. She makes a living at art shows, for crap's sake.
Right.
We were talking this noon about Sam Alexander.
Right. Sam works for me. Sam is my partner.
I know.
How the pictures of you
and you get to talk. Go ahead. Everybody get by the floor.
Yeah.
I know
Sam. What's your story on how? On what happened to Sam?
I know exactly what happened to Sam. A tank blew up in his face.
Right,
he cut his body. His body is all scarred up and he's gimped up. And his face was gone. He's about $200,000 worth of plastic surgery in his fudge. He's great now. He can take the mask off. I don't get sick.
That's not the guy with the eye right in the middle of his head.
No.
That's William Dirks.
That's William Dirks. I found William.
I worked with him the last year he was alive.
Huh?
I worked with Bill last year he was alive.
I put him in the business.
Yeah, he was good.
Okay, it was in somewhere in Jersey, Flemington, or I don't know, it was somewhere in Jersey. And we were working there. I was partners with Artie Steinhardt, and we had a sideshow. And William Dirks comes down the midway, and I look at him, and I say, oh, wow, this is what we need. And I go over to him, and I say, excuse me, what do you do? And he says, I'm a janitor for a church. I said, well, how much is that pay you? I think he was getting like $35 a week. I says, well, you come to work for us, we'll give you $100 a week. And then not only did he go to work for us, but we had the alligator skin girl, his wife,
and
the blow-off, and we got them together. Now, the alligator skin girl, we got, the kids came out, and she wanted to get in there, and she wanted to do something.
What's her name?
I can't think of her name offhand, but she was in the blow-off, and then William Dirks and her got together, and then that was the start of something big, and I put both of them in the business.
You know the story of when she died?
No.
She had asthma real bad. Remember Burkhardt?
Oh, yeah.
And he took her to the hospital to get a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was on the table waiting for get a shot. She had heart failure right in the hospital and
yeah.
died before I could do anything about it.
Same thing happened with the fat girl.
Same happened to Betty Lou Williams. Betty Lou Williams had a heart asthma. She died in Trenton, New Jersey.
They told me she died in pneumonia.
The state fair at the age of 21.
She couldn't breathe.
Well, they took the fat girl in to take the fat off the inside of her legs so she'd be able to walk and care for herself. Kelly was going to pay for it. And they put her on a gurney, and she choked on her own saliva. And they didn't know it, and she died. The only time I ever saw Kelly cry. Broke down and crying like a baby.
Well, fat girls, giants.
Was that the man who owned the show?
Yeah, Slim Kelly.
Yeah, wasn't he just all like...
He was like a father to me, too.
The gentleman giant?
Is he a man who broke you?
Chaniac, the half-man?
No. A fella by the name brought me in on sideshows with Gene Kite. And his wife was a sword swallower. And they had nothing in the show. I had this one I've got to tell you. I learned a lot from old Earl Meyer. 14 dogs on the show. Nothing like it. His wife was a kook for dogs. I think it was a substitute because she never had any children. And I think the dogs were her children. That was a substitute. But his main attraction was the two-headed baby, which was made of rubber. And to make sure that the marks didn't catch on, we added food color each week to the water. And I can hear him now in my mind. Tell the nurse to bring out the little two-headed baby what was born, not born, but born, in Birmingham, England. And then, of course, I had to lecture on it. Now, I'm eating fire, doing the human blockhead, making the blow opening, lecturing the inside, and tattooing in between times. What, the way I do it, I get the outline on the mark. And they won't leave then, see. And then I'd get up, lecture the show, do my act. So one night I started nipping a little bit, and I frankly wasn't feeling any pain. And I was waxing very, very loquaciously on the two-headed baby. And I said, I turned it around like this in the bottle. I said, you'll notice when the spinal column comes up, it branches off like the limb on a tree to support each individual head. Now, when the baby was alive, they tell us that each head cried and ate independently of each other, indicating at least that Mother Nature intended the creation of twins and blah, 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 blah. And some guy, some mark down the audience says, oh, yeah, who was his father, B.F. Goodrich? Well, I started laughing. I cracked up.
I got the food card.
Well, Earl just blew, why did you laugh? I said, my God, Earl, that was funny. Where's your sense of humor?
Yeah, you gotta hear this. You want to hear a good jackpot? Okay, we're working a flea market. Now, I bought this two-headed baby show from what was his name? Brian Kennedy was his name. But I bought it, and him and his sons were running it, and I was working pens. And what happened is there was a fire inside the show, and the inside of the show started to burn, and they took the two-headed baby's water. And they